Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Hello, and welcome to Radio Oldie with me, Harry Mount, editor of the Oldie, and I'm delighted to be talking to Rachel Johnson, broadcaster and journalist. LBC presenter, does the Difficult Women podcast, edited The Lady, stood to become an MEP, successful novelist, most importantly was an Oldie columnist, and is a much-valued Oldie contributor. And astonishingly, she's just turned 60. How do you feel about that?
I feel surprisingly good as things are holding up so far. I mean, nothing has gone too far south.
You wrote an article, in fact, about your breasts quite recently.
I'm always writing about my breasts. Yes. Did I really? You must remind me which one.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Still look on fabulous form, yeah.
Yes. Well, what happened there was they just went up two cup sizes over the last 5 years.
Because?
Well, I think it's partly genetic, partly just a bit of middle-age spread, I have to admit, because I've put on probably half a stone in the last 10 years. And annoyingly, on my 60th birthday, a great friend of mine who I was staying with in the south of France a couple of weeks ago sent me a photograph of me on my 50s, when I was 50, in a bikini in Greece. And I'm not... I know I'm saying this myself, but it was completely banging, Harry. Yeah. I mean, banging doesn't really cover it. I looked at it and I thought, my God, if only we knew at the time.
Always applies. Even when you're 80, you'll look good when you look back when you're 100, yeah.
You're never as young as you are today, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, Lord Beaverbrook once said, I pity anyone who isn't a journalist, and you've been a journalist for a long time, but it's still the most enjoyable job in the world, don't you think?
It is. But I was listening to something the other day, and I can't remember what it is because of early onset, where they were talking about a journalist turned politician, and I can't remember which one, obviously, and it doesn't really matter. But the journalist had been having a wonderful time. It could have even been Churchill, but I don't think so. And suddenly they thought to themselves, in fact, what is even more fun than being a journalist is being a politician. Because one, you can do both. QED, so many people we know, from George Osborne.
Two of your brothers,
Michael
yeah.
Gove, Boris Johnson. One, you can do both. But two, you get your sticky mitts on the levers of power, which you don't if you're a journalist.
And there is a theory, I think your brother Boris said this, that as a journalist you're on the sidelines. If you're a politician, you're actually on the
field. Yeah, he made some thing about throwing the stones from the greenhouse or something, and how it was, you could hear the crash and the merry tinkle, but in fact, that wore, the kind of endorphin high of that wore off after a while.
Although you did stand to become an MEP, didn't you? So did you enjoy that?
I thought it was a cause of much hilarity nationwide. I remember Nicholas Coleridge ringing me up to complain about the fact that I'd joined the Lib Dems, had been a breaking alert on his phone. And he said, why is...
Slow news day.
Why is a sort of an irritating, blonde, middle-aged journalist joining the Lib Dems on the national news? Well, it was, because... It was news because, and only interesting because, what I positioned myself in direct opposition to my brother and everything he was trying to do. Yeah. So in very quickly, in 2015, or I can't remember when, 2016, 2017, I joined the Lib Dems. I found the experience so meh. I can't really think of a word to describe it. They kept saying things like, would you appear in this campaign video? And I would have this sort of sinking feeling. I left the Lib Dems, and then, of course, 2019 comes along, and the European elections that should never have been were going to take place in whenever it was, June. They shouldn't have taken place because we should have left the EU and therefore had no representatives in the European Parliament. But... they had to then everyone had to find candidates to fight the European elections. And I put myself forward for this new party, which has had the ridiculous name of Change UK, which had the ridiculous constitution of six equal leaders. One of them was Chuka Amuna, and another one was Anna Soubry. Anyway, and they selected me. Ivo was furious. Ivo is my husband, because he wanted to be a Euro MP. And he thought I was stealing his thunder, which I may well have been, and I have apologised to him. Anyway, I was selected and I was put first in the candidates list for the South West. The Brexit Party, which, as you will remember, swept the board in those elections in 2019, my direct opposing candidate for the Brexit Party was Anne Widdecombe, who I had tussled with many times, not least in the Big Brother house for 3 weeks, where she had everyone for breakfast and actually reduced me to a state of total servitude. I was bringing her tea and biscuits in bed, and I was begging her, say, Anne, what can I do for you next? The woman is amazing. She should do your podcast.
And I believe she won, didn't she?
Yeah, the Brexit Party won. And anyway, you know that irritating thing people say to journalists when something really horrible happens, which is, well, at least you can get a column out of the fact your leg was amputated. As I went through this process of being a candidate, it was fascinating, and I do recommend to everybody, stand for office once.
And you did get a book out of it.
Yeah, you finished my...
Sorry,
you completed my sentence.
Yeah, yeah. But were you glad to return to journalism, were you?
There was something incredibly absorbing and granular about dealing with ordinary people about real issues that you do not get as a journalist. There is no question about it.
No, you're dealing with...
It's real life, Harry.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than our interpretation, our review, our analysis of what life is.
Yeah, yeah. You're essentially interviewing real people the whole time, aren't you, as opposed to one journalist interviewing another journalist.
What we do is essentially entertainment.
Yeah, higher form of gossip, in a way.
Well, it's the prerogative of the harlot.
Yeah, and therefore incredibly enjoyable, and a low bore count, don't you think, among journalists? They are extremely good company, don't you think, on the whole?
Oh, I mean, I literally divide people into journalists and not journalists. It's like celebrities and civilians. I can't really spend any time with people who aren't journalists or politicians, actually, because there is a lot of intersectionality in the way they think, the things they want to talk about.
Well informed, yeah. You don't have to explain things. It's quite a big division in life between bores and non-bores, which we were once at a party having a very good gossip, and a very boring woman who shall remain nameless came up and started asking you about schools to send her children to, and you said, magic moment, you said, I don't talk to people about schools at parties. Quite right.
I also have I actually want to do another one. I think I have done this for you, Harry. Banned topics of conversation at dinner.
Yeah,
schools,
it, yes, yeah.
Children, holidays, health. I mean, really.
Whereas encouraged subjects are money and sex.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there are some topics that you can't talk about at the moment. Probably Trump and the Middle East, Gaza. It's too stressful because it reduces a dinner party to a screaming match.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And also, it's not really going to change what's happening in those situations, is it?
I thought, actually, Cosmo wrote a really good piece about that.
Landesman.
Saying, oh, yes, am I asked my opinions on Gaza? My opinion on Gaza will not change anything. By the way, I'm interviewing the First Lady of Israel tomorrow. And her, you know...
Well, her opinion might have some difference, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What she's been to the funeral of every Jew or Israeli who has been killed or died since October the 7th at the hands of terrorists. So she knows of what she speaks, you know,
yeah.
So she's worth hearing.
Well, I believe the great sage Homer Simpson got it right when he said, actors, is there anything they don't know when an actor opines on some huge political situation? Of course they're going to change the situation. Now, if we can go back to your childhood, having read many books about it, strikes me as a childhood of friendly competition. Would you describe it as that, or unfriendly competition?
I don't think friendly really applies. It was fraternal competition.
Encouraged by your father, Stanley Johnson.
Didn't need much encouragement, really. I mean, people think that we were told to kind of go out and biff each other up or run races against each other. But we were just so determined to win, each one of us, that he really just... He just went off and wrote books during the holidays.
And it applied all the way down. Famously, Boris is the oldest of the children, and famously said he wanted to be world king age 5, and it all...
No, I think 4.
4, sorry. And it all fell apart when you were born, this pre-lapsarian joy of being on his own. You all competed with each other, but all of you are or were intercompetitive with each other. Is that right?
Yes, and we all competed madly about who was in... the first 11 or the first 15 and who got the best A levels and who got the scholarships and who, but he tended to do everything first, obviously. Mm. And by some distance, probably apart from Joe, who, well, I don't need to say something really odd now, I feel like I'm the runt. Not only am I the only girl in the litter, I was the only child, and Harry, you will understand my pain, who didn't get a first or a scholarship to Oxford. Imagine the torment.
Do you think, agony, do you think the two went together, that as a girl, although you went to top girls' school, St Paul's, that probably was the case then, less so now that women were I'm barely educated,
even though I went to Bryanston for 3 critical years, and then I went to St Paul's, which means I've completely missed out history, English history.
Did they not teach that at St Paul's?
No, I mean, I did O-level history, but basically, everybody should... I think Michael goes right about this. You should be taught history. Otherwise, you have no idea.
Have you taught yourself it?
I'm trying, but the thing is, I'm married to a man who was really taught his history at prep school, and they went through the entire sweep of English history, all the kings,
all the dates,
and then they did it again. So it has really stuck.
Oh, it's absolutely crucial. I thought that had slightly changed, or perhaps not, in that when I was at prep school, amazingly, the girls were not allowed to learn Latin or Greek. That sort of thing, I thought, had changed generally, but that thing of knowing dates, completely crucial. But anyway, you still managed to get into New College, Oxford, and read classics, which,
I think it was a mistake, Harry. I'm one of these perpetual imposters. I genuinely think it was a mistake. I have this kind of little fantasy that what happened was my Heather Briggstock ran New College, you know, their High Mistress of
St Paul's,
and said, "It's terribly sad, but she's not very bright, but would you have her?" Do you think lots of people...
Or maybe there was another girl called Rachel Johnston, now very miserable somewhere, who should have got in. Was it also quite helpful? Your parents, it's fair to say, didn't have lots of money, so you, apart from you, had to win scholarships.
Well, I did get scholarships, actually.
Oh, well, but so I didn't get a...
I mean, can I just refine it? Because I was actually offered an exhibition to LMH, but I turned it down for a place at New College. Is that allowed to say?
Yeah, of course you're allowed to say that, as the much more famous college.
Well, I wanted to go to New College because my grandfather, who...
James Fawcett, is that right?
God, you're brilliant, yeah.
Fellow of All Souls.
One of the authors of the ECHR, former president of the Commission of Human Rights, Fellow of All Souls, prize fellow. He went, my Uncle Edmund went... I wanted to go. My brother Leo went 2 years later. So it was actually more of a family college than Balliol, where Joe and Boris went.
Yeah, you were taught by the famous Robin Lane Fox, classics. Don there, yeah. But do you think then that's powered you on, then, that feeling of insecurity? You feel insecure among Johnsons, but superior to all other human beings?
No, I don't feel superior at all. Is the truth. Johnsons are driven by a terrible sense of tramp dread, I think Toby Young calls it. We never had any money, as you rightly pointed out. And we accept all work. I mean, have I ever... maybe once in my life. The only... giving up the pop column was agonising.
This because on the
Rock and Pop column. Because I literally think whenever I'm asked to do something, that's the last time I'm going to be asked to do it. I'm going to do it.
Which is actually a very good principle in journalism, because A, you get better at it, but B, if you're a commissioning editor, you think, who'll do this? It's really good. I was this figure on the Daily Mail quite a long time.
Yeah.
To be the person, oh, he'll do anything. And it's really good.
Quentin Letts.
But also,
Tom Utley.
But it's a really good thing, though. Whereas
if you're,
as you will know from your time at the Lady, if you ring up someone saying, no, that's a little beneath me, you go, all right, well, I won't ask them again.
I mean, it's a bit like parties, Harry, you and I.
Quite like going to a party, yeah.
It's like, you never know what's going to happen at a party. So I always try my damnedest to get to a party. Like, I've got two tomorrow night. I always want to say yes to the commission because, one, don't tell anybody, but I can write an article in about 5 minutes.
Well, you are, but that's also, like the great Ian Wilson, that's actually an extremely good skill. It means you can do more of them. Also means you're busy because you're being asked to do stuff. It also means you won't be one of those precious people who only writes one article every 2 years and then gets very angry when you've changed your misspelling of the word dog or whatever. You're moving on to the next thing. You don't mind being changed, do you?
Well, no, but also I've got this terrible thing. Despite having imposter syndrome, when I write an article, or in fact I write anything, I read it and I'm always struck by its brilliance.
Done it
by
again.
Its brilliance.
Unbelievable. Yeah, but you've never, ever, ever complained. Actually, you don't need changing. It comes in perfectly, but you never, ever complain because you're moving on to the next thing. Same with people like Ian Wilson, and you must have had people when you were at the Lady, grumpy, please themselves, almost always men, who go, oh, yes, you're right. And the mental note is, I shall never commission you again.
I do remember the complaints I got when I got commissioning at the Lady. I was not in charge of the payment to contributors, and of course they were very rarely paid. And my goodness, as an editor, I think the oldies are very efficient, luckily.
Yeah, we'd always pay very quickly.
You'll pay very quickly, but the Lady wasn't. And I remember David Jenkins, among others. I think the late Alexander Chancellor, too, absolutely blowing up at me. And even though I had absolutely no control over it, anyway.
Yeah. Talking about the Lady, it is extremely sad that it's closed down after 140 years. Was the writing on the wall for the Lady when you were editing it?
I remember I had lunch with Emma Soames, who was editor of Saga, and we just when I began, and she said, "It's crazy that this is coming out weekly." It's quite hard work putting out a weekly. The deadline comes around very fast. And it sucks content. You know, you need to commission a huge amount all the time. And I remember thinking she was right, because it wouldn't have altered the number of small ads that people wanted to place. We were just adding to our costs by producing a magazine every week.
In fact, the TLS has just gone fortnightly, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I said this to Ben Budworth, who was the publisher, and he poo-pooed it. But eventually it did go fortnightly and then monthly, and then it was on the glide. It was on the Liverpool Care pathway to being snuffed out entirely by Ben Budworth. And the magazine title, though, there was huge interest when it was announced it was going to go under. Lots of people contacted me and said, let's buy it. And I thought, yes, let's buy it.
A very, very famous name, and including, it appears in P.G. Woodhouse under the name
Milady's Boudoir.
You could call it that, absolutely genius. And it could have survived, couldn't it? Wasn't its main disaster was not putting its classified online many years ago, wasn't it?
Not paywalling its classified. So they were giving away the milk for free right from the beginning. I never, never, never understood this. People, and I had to accept this as editor, and I saw this immediately, they were not buying the Lady for the interview with Julie Andrews or Judy Dench. They were buying the Lady because they wanted to see whether they could get a housekeeping job, right? Or a nanny or a carer or whatever. That was the engine of the De Chevaux. And instead of, you know, and that, so you, when it was all print rather than, you had to buy the magazine. So good, really, job done. Newsstand, sale, good, money in the bank. But once we had a big website and you put the small ads for free on the website, there was no reason to...
The articles were paid.
No. The articles were free as well. There was no need to buy the lady anymore. We ate our own lunch.
Completely crazy. That eventually came to an end, presumably, didn't it, or not?
Well, I can't remember, but I remember thinking it was so mad.
That's madness. But very enjoyable, although clearly from that documentary...
Got a book out of it.
Got a book out of it. Like Hunter Davis, the veteran journalist who had a heart operation. I said, God, how did it go? I said, not bad, I got three articles out of it.
Well, I mean, I couldn't go to Zach Goldsmith's wedding, but I got a Substack out of it because I had an endoscopy. I'm sure our listeners would be interested.
Double hit, endoscopy and not going to a posh wedding.
Nikki Haslam's already texted me today to tick me off for using the phrase society wedding in relation.
A bit on his commonness. All right, inverted commas. But there was a very enjoyable documentary where you clearly didn't get on with the owner, Julia Budworth, or was that slightly sexed up for the programme in the TV programme?
No, not at all. Sexed down. I mean, we couldn't put it all in.
She didn't like you talking about sex, is that right?
Well, do you remember the famous interview she gave to Matthew Bell? Yes. One of the only great scoops he ever got. But she... He toddled up to Dear Bolts Hall, Suffolk, the Gorgons, which Quentin Letts then christened the Gorgons Lair, where all journalists made this pilgrimage. And she said, the thing about Rachel is you can't get her away from a penis. It's penis this, penis that. Can you imagine Matthew Bell? And I couldn't understand why she'd said it. And I found out only about a year later, which was that she'd been listening to me on Any Questions. And as you know, I'm very dim and ignorant, but confident. It's a terrible...
That's a perfect combo, yeah.
So there I was on some Any Questions panel in, like, I don't know, some ghastly town. That's terrible. Never mind. And I was asked whether Britain should get rid of its nuclear deterrent in the shape of Trident. I couldn't think what to say. So I said... It was a willy-waving anachronism. And then that was it. And Mrs. Budworth had been listening to the programme.
You didn't even use the word penis.
No. Never, didn't think I ever have, apart from just now. And that was that.
It certainly didn't appear within the covers of the lady.
And then that was that.
And do you think because of having this surprisingly low opinion of yourself, it's why you don't mind... slights or don't take umbrage? I remember once when I very foolishly quoted you off the record, but I did say a member of the Johnson family, and it was clearly you. It was my mistake, and you quite rightly rang me up and got very cross, and I thought, oh God, I've been very stupid. That evening I saw you at a party, I said, I'm so sorry, it was really stupid of me. You said, what? Well, what I did this morning. And you'd completely forgotten. So you don't, which is another very
never
good thing
bear
to journalists.
A grudge.
Yeah. Move
never,
on to the next thing.
Never. I've put my foot in it so many times that if I can never remember who I'm supposed to be cross with. The important thing is to get it over with and move on. And also, the other thing is, life is so long, and I think people who say, oh, you can't have a dinner party with X, Y, and Z, and oh, she's not talking to X. It's like, please, just get over yourselves.
Yeah, it's a brilliant attitude. And now you are on LBC, as I said, and you're doing the podcast Difficult Women. Do you prefer broadcasting to writing?
The truth is, Harry, and I think I said this, I've said, you can edit this bit, I'm a writer, not a broadcaster, I think, really. I mean, if you listen to, you know, some of my brilliant colleagues on LBC... They're broadcasters, not writers, right? If you listen to James O'Brien or Nick Ferrari, you know, these are very, very different personalities, very, very different ideologies. But both of them have got an exceptional ability to broadcast, to just keep talking, to remain interesting. And it's really hard, Harry.
But you can do that, can't you? What can they do? What can they do that you can't?
I've never said an interesting thing. I promise you, I've never said an interesting thing on LBC. It's really harder than it looks.
When they're monologuing or when they're talking to someone else?
Both. It's a really different skill. When I started doing my show on LBC, Gillian Reynolds, the doyenne of radio criticism, she did a Sunday Times review of my LBC show. And I'd only been doing it a couple of weeks, and it is a very, very different skill. You know, commanding a 3-hour show compared to writing an 800-word column. And the review began, and I'll never forget it. Poor Rachel Johnson.
Poor you, was and it the first course, show, was it?
I think it was. Yeah. And imagine the sort of mixed emotions that stirred in me, because one, I was quite cross. Two, I thought she was right. Three, I wanted to prove her wrong. Four, I was determined to do better, right? So in a way, it was a very helpful thing she did.
I presume you did all those four things, didn't you?
But I always say this to my bosses at LBC, which is to be given the opportunity to learn a new skill in middle age is such a joy. It's such a, I hate the word, gift. And I genuinely do just want to get better. Because
I presumably have, what things have you learned since that first show?
To listen more, to allow air into things. You don't need to fill every pause. What I want to learn how to do better is questions. Now, questions are a real art. They've got to be short and to the point. Do not do a Jim Nocte rambling style essay question or a Nick Robinson paragraph showing how well-informed you are, ending with a question. Listen to what Nick Ferrari does. He just asks very short, simple questions. That's how you get good answers.
And also you can tell, with presenters on the Today programme, massive division between those. You could tell they're more interested in themselves than the person they're interviewing.
Yes, when the tape is off, we're going to have a real
agree on the list. Because actually, it's the same with journalism, isn't it? That in theory, there are no rules about how to write articles, but there sort of are. I remember once when I was doing a feature for the Daily Mail, and I stupidly lost my way, and I said to the very nice features editor, I'm not quite sure how to do this, and he said, in a world-weary way, he said, oh, just drop in a personal experience, put the peg in, and then do the second half. And he was quite right, and it is actually very straightforward, but if you don't know that, you can very easily write a completely unreadable article, can't you?
Yeah. I mean, I think I love doing it. I find it quite tiring. I'd love to say it is my métier, but I don't think it is. But I hope the LBC bosses aren't listening, because I'd love them to give me more work.
And what's it like? You've written several very successful novels, including Notting Hill and Shire Hill. Was writing a book, I find writing a book more boring, because you don't get the immediate hit of, you know, write your 1,000 words in the paper the next day, get your little picture in the paper, nice people ring up and say, or you might say a great piece even if I haven't read it. But did you find it boring writing books, or do you find it boring writing books?
No, I don't think it's boring. I would say that if you ask me what I regard as my achievements, it's not my journalism or my radio shows or my podcasts or my Substack. It's my children, my marriage, and my books. These are the things that you put most work into and most time into and most effort into. And in the end, that hard work gives you a different sense of satisfaction, or just, I won't say achievement, because, you know, I can't claim credit for my children.
And we'll finish by talking about your late mother, the distinguished artist Charlotte Johnson Wilde, do we call her?
Yeah, Charlotte Johnson Wilde.
And you said an extremely moving thing just after she died. You said, spend as much time with them as possible while they're alive. I only met her a couple of times, but she was, she had the Fawcett brains and a very good artist. How instrumental was she in creating your character, do you think?
That's an interesting question. I think the thing about my mother is that she was a very human being. Okay, you, there are lots of people who are rather inhuman beings, who are sort of wooden tops, invertebrates. But she, you know, she was all feeling and all emotion, but with a very, very sharp intellect. I mean, got into Oxford at 17, and since she died, I've found a trunk, which actually some publishers are coming to have a look at, full of everything she'd written as well. So she painted and she wrote constantly. Both, I've got two incredibly creative parents. I mean, my father's now writing his 28th book in Greece about the world's coastlines and how to save them. She was working on two or three paintings when she died. And those are my, you know, imagine having
that. And had you all very young, didn't you?
Had us all incredibly young, 21, Boris, me, 23, Leo, 25, Joe, 28, 29. So the example that they set to us, which was, you know, do everything, work incredibly hard. The currency was being funny, never boring, being come top. Do, you know, just have a big life. Don't have a boring pedestrian suburban life. You know, what more could I have asked for? So, yes, I think she did shape my personality.
And she had a breakdown in the 70s. Was it brought on by that huge combination of things?
I think it was brought on by having, you know, four small children, restless, frustrated creative energy, mental illness and galloping OCD. Quite easy, yeah. I mean, she struggled with that all her life.
Yeah. Well, a somber moment to finish on, but thank you so much to Rachel Johnson for appearing on Radio Oldie.
Thank you very much, Harry.
You have been listening to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get three trial issues of the Oldie magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every six issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial.